Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. I'm Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about, most of us really want to reach optimum levels of health and wellness. We want to feel better, live longer, and enjoy life even more, and that's what I attempt to bring you on each of the Healthy Alternative shows. My guest I'm going to be interviewing soon is Christy Kalinske. She is Senior Program Manager with the Center for Healthy Aging. That's a part of the National Council of Aging. And she provides technical assistance, guidance, and program management to state government agencies and community-based organizations that are implementing evidence-based healthy aging programs. And we're going to be talking to her about these programs, how they can affect the elderly, and how really the impact it can have on people you know. We'll be back with her in just a couple of minutes. Every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue or concern you should know about because it can have a real impact on you. What I want to talk about today is the American Dietetic Association, which is formerly known as the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Let me tell you a little story. Steve Cooksey is a health and nutrition blogger located in North Carolina. He received a 19-page letter from the North Carolina Board of Dietetics Nutrition, and basically what they were saying that his blog, which featured nutritional principles based on the paleo diet, was dispensing nutritional advice or nutritional counseling without a license. The board ordered him to take down the nutritional advice or face prosecution. Now, the North Carolina Board of Dietetic and Nutrition is a state chapter of the American Dietetic Association. Now, there are some documents that were released by Forbes magazine that what they found is that the ADA is moving full steam ahead with a strategy of gaining legal control over the term nutritionist, and they're looking at making and limiting people who can talk about nutrition to their members. So they have actually been attempting to patent registered dietitian and other related nutritional professional terms like certified nutrition coach, registered nutrition educator, all kinds of things like that. There was a leaked document that described what they called a mega issue by the ADA, which that they need to protect registered dietitians' licensure, want to increase licensure efforts, and retaliate against non-licensed parties around the country. They want to, in effect, protect their association. So the ADA basically wants you to only get nutritional advice from conventionally trained registered dietitians who've gone through their training program. So that means you won't be able to go to your chiropractor, naturopath, personal trainer to get some advice. Why are they doing this and who's assisting them? Well, it turns out the ADA is supported by companies like Coke, General Mills, and all the other processed foods giants, and they're doing the CE courses, they're doing programs at conventions, like one was a fresh look at processed foods presented by a 15-year Kellogg veteran and employee of the International Food Information Council, which represents General Mills, Kraft, PepsiCo, Mars, people like that. The speaker actually gave the message that processed foods are an important part of the American diet to be consumed along with fresh produce. It's a course that created by Coca-Cola, and it gets continuing education credits called Children's Dietary Recommendations When Urban Myths, Opinions, Parental Perception, and Evidence Collide. What they're teaching is that fluoride, sugar, artificial colors, non-nutritive sweeteners have been carefully examined for their efforts on children's health, growth, and development, and basically recommending them. Now, while they're trying to get licensure in states, and states pretty much control licensure, the Michigan Office of Regulatory Reinvention has gone the other way and deemed dietitian nutritionists one of 18 occupations they recommend to be deregulated, and that the occupational board be eliminated. And why? Because it inhibits entrepreneurship, restricts competition, it leads to increased costs and decreased levels of service for consumers. So you need to be aware the ADA is, while Michigan is stopping them potentially, the ADA is trying to get every state to say they are the only ones who can tell you what to eat and how to eat it. And by the way, they really like processed foods. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can go to teplitz.com, teplitz.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I do a free monthly e-newsletter called the Teplitz Report. You can find it on teplitz.com. Click on the Home About button. You can sign up there. It has information different from what I cover in Healthy Alternatives. Every week, I also like to talk to you about Healthy Breakthrough, the newest discoveries and latest information about healthy alternatives you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. I'm going to talk about a little strange one this time. It's, pardon the expression, rats. Now, there was an interesting experiment that was done recently where rats were freed from a cage. They then had a choice of either going to eat chocolate or they could free the other trapped rats. Well, turns out the vast majority of the rats chose to open the trap door to release the rat before the rats went for the chocolate. So they're actually choosing to help, and then they were actually sharing the chocolate. Now, some cases, the rat first took the chocolate chip out of a container but didn't eat it. Then they freed the other rats and shared the chocolate almost as if they were serving them chocolate. This was all reported in the journal Science. And female rats actually showed consistently more empathy than males. All six females freed their trapped partners. 17 of the 20 males did so, but the females demonstrated more pro-social behaviors than the male, in effect. So the notion that being caring and helpful, while we think it's our species that specializes in being caring, now we know there are many other species that can do this, and maybe we ought to pay attention to what rats are doing out there, because they're really being helpful to rats that are trapped. Before I bring my guest on, Christy Kalinsky, I'd like to talk to you about a book that I've done called Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. This is a book that's full of techniques, tools, things you can use instantly to make a difference in how you experience stress. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. You can either go to Amazon or you can go to teplitz.com and click on the products button and you can order it there. My guest today is Christy Kalinsky. She's Senior Program Manager for the Center for Healthy Aging,
which is a part of the National Council on Aging. It's a nonprofit service and advocacy organization whose mission is to improve the lives of millions of older adults, especially those who are vulnerable and disadvantaged. Within the Council of Aging, the Center for Healthy Aging helps community-based organizations develop and implement proven programs that promote healthy living, especially for older adults. And Christy provides technical assistance and guidance and program management to state government agencies, as well as community-based organizations that are implementing evidence-based healthy aging programs. Christy has a BS in Human Development and Family Studies and a Master's of Social Work. And Christy, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Why, thank you.
So I've got a question for you. How did you actually get involved with older adults and aging?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, when I first started my career as a social worker, I was convinced that I wanted to be a child therapist, a child and family therapist. And I decided to step outside of the comfort zone and took an internship opportunity with a wonderful nonprofit in Los Angeles that really exposed me to working with older adults, and not just from a clinical perspective, but also from a program management and a program development perspective. And I had such a fantastic internship experience, and this was a number of years ago, that I decided that, you know, this was really the area and the population that I wanted to focus my social work career on.
Okay, and how long have you been doing it now?
Oh, goodness, about 10 years.
Terrific. And now let's take a look at the Center for Aging. What's the primary goal of it in terms of improving health of older adults, and what are you folks doing?
Well, we work with community-based organizations, state organizations, whether it's a Department of Public Health, a state unit on aging, various community-based organizations. Some of them are government-based, whether they're an area agency on aging or a local health department, all the way to traditional nonprofit community organizations that have some emphasis in their mission to work with and to serve and to improve the quality of life of older adults. So we work with those organizations at all levels to provide them with tools, resources, and expertise to allow them to develop, to build, to grow healthy aging programs, specifically those healthy aging programs that have been proven effective through research. So we provide the various resources and expertise that can assist them in serving their communities.
So what do you define in this population as a chronic condition?
Chronic condition, I think, is really important to separate from an acute condition. So a chronic condition is an ongoing illness. So, for example, arthritis, diabetes, hypertension. So that's different from a short-term condition like strep throat or the stomach flu. A chronic condition isn't likely to be cured, but rather it needs to be controlled. There aren't really any quick fixes when it comes to chronic conditions. There's not a magical pill that you can take that will make you feel better, or, you know, let it run its course for a week or two and you'll be back on the right track. We know that controlling a chronic condition can be a struggle. It can require significant lifestyle adaptations, and making those changes can be really difficult. You know, I think, especially this time of year, about those New Year's resolutions to eat better and exercise more, and how many people are still sustaining those changes in February or March?
But, only me, of course.
I know. Those gym memberships, I used to joke that I was a YMCA member, and I used to joke around that, you know, once April or May rolled around, I was making a monthly donation to the YMCA. It was no longer my gym membership. But, you know, for a person with chronic illness, their health and quality of life really depend on those sustained lifestyle changes.
Since you're pushing them to an area that regular folks don't keep up, how do you convince an older person who has this kind of stuff going on, like arthritis and diabetes, you know, how crucial exercise, as an example, would be for them feeling better?
You know, it's interesting that you use the word convince. There's not really any convincing. It's more about, and there's a field of study called motivational interviewing or behavior change, and it's really looking at meeting a person where they're at and determining what's important to them. So we've all had physicians or nurses who tell us, you know, you need to get your weight under control. If you're a diabetic or if you have diabetes, your A1C is high. We need to get that down. Here's what you need to do. But unless that change resonates with me, I'm not likely to make that change. So we need to figure out, how do we tie that change into something that impacts my quality of life and something I care about? So yes, if I have diabetes, my A1C needs to be below 7. Well, that's nice. I really should have my A1C below 7. But what if I've decided that there's an important event coming up that I would really like to attend, and unless I'm feeling well, I can't attend that event. I can't go on that family vacation. And then suddenly it starts mattering to me. So it's really about connecting with a person, determining what matters to them, that they're going to make these health behavior changes, and going from there.
So in training these community-based organizations, state government agencies, you're really talking about having to train them on a real flexibility when they're talking to folks and how they recommend what they're going to recommend.
Exactly. And the organizations that we work with at state and community levels really are experts in their populations and the communities that they're serving. And they have wonderful staff. And it really is about making that connection. And you know, different from kind of a traditional clinical relationship where, you know, a provider says, you have this illness, and here's what you need to do to fix it. It's about motivating and empowering and really connecting with the community to really empower them to take charge of their own health.
So are your folks able to spend more than the 5 minutes that docs spend with their patients?
I would say yes. they have that benefit.
Otherwise, it'd be, hi, I'd like to motivate you real fast. We got 3.5 minutes left.
I know. It's so challenging.
Now, can you talk about some of the things that, since you're saying you folks are really evidence-based, what have you been finding in terms of the evidence on lifestyle choices and how they assist chronic conditions, assuming somebody's willing to do it? So kind of the overall bag of tricks you're coming in with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's no surprise. Lifestyle plays a major role when it comes to living with chronic conditions. We know that exercise and nutrition are critically important in this regard. We know that people who eat better and are physically active experience improved quality of life. That's not earth-shattering. But something that I cite often when I'm speaking with groups and doing presentations, there's an astounding statistic from the World Health Organization and the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention here nationally. They've estimated that 80% of heart disease, 80% of type 2 diabetes, and 40% of cancers could be prevented by doing three things: exercising more, eating better, and avoiding tobacco. And it really is astounding to me that 80% of heart disease and type 2 diabetes and 40% of cancers could be eliminated if we simply ate better, were more physically active, and avoided tobacco. So the bottom line is, we play a significant role in managing our own health, and chronic conditions aren't something that are outside of our locus of control. They're not something that just happened to us, but we can really do something about it.
So actually that research is pointing that there are ways of because you were saying earlier that you can't really solve it, you have to live with them, but from what they're saying is you can potentially solve them by making these kind of lifestyle changes. Am I hearing that right?
Prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So really looking at prevention and you know, things like heart disease and type 2 diabetes that are very lifestyle dependent, certainly prevention plays a huge role. And even once we have a diagnosis of a chronic condition, better managing that chronic condition is so critical.
Now, there's when you say, you know, eating well, nutritional, that kind of stuff, that is a broad definition.
It certainly is.
Because lots of people have different notions of what is eating well. It's called, I went to McDonald's every day. That's good.
I've cut myself down from 5 sodas to 2, yes.
Yeah, so where are you guys coming in on the spectrum of what you're defining as nutritional healthy eating?
Well, I think it's very personal and it's very dependent on the person. And there are certainly a number of resources available that are specific to older adults that have been produced by the federal agencies, the big one being the CDC, that offers guidelines and recommendations. And within our organization, we're really more at a level where we're working with state agencies and community-based providers to help them to implement programming. So we're not necessarily working one-on-one with those individuals. However, there are a number of federal recommendations. Like I said, the CDC is a great place to go to learn more. That's really looking at, you know, what are the nutritional recommendations, the physical activity guidelines that are specific to older adults, because they have a specific set of needs, older adults, than their younger generational cohorts.
So before we continue, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net, and we'll be back with my guest, Christy Kalinske, in just a moment.
Do you suffer from headaches, migraines, sinus colds, stiff neck and sore shoulders? How would you like a way to get rid of the headache in 90 seconds, the migraine in 5 minutes, treat and relieve stiff neck and sore shoulders? Well, you can. I've got a DVD that I've created called Instant Headache and Migraine Relief, and it shows you these techniques that you can do on yourself as well as others. If you'd like to find out more about it, go to teplitz.com. You'll see the products button on the navigation at the top. Click on DVDs, and you'll be able to go in and take a look at the DVD.
So my guest today is Christy Kalinske. She's a senior program manager for the Center for Healthy Aging, which is within the National Council on Aging, which focuses in on really improving the lives of older adults. And the Center for Healthy Aging, she's involved with providing technical assistance, guidance, and program management to state governments and agencies that are community-based on really looking at evidence-based healthy aging programs. So, Christy, we were just, as we took the break, we were talking about nutrition. Now, one of the things I'm aware of that in older adults, their ability to absorb nutrients tends to go down. They tend to eat less food. Have you looked at any of the evidence-based stuff on vitamin supplementation to assist them when they're an older adult?
My organization specifically has not. However, I do know that from past experience working with other organizations and doing care management, especially for homebound older adults where nutrition is a real issue, I do know that that's incorporated into a number of the care management programs as far as the nutritional supplements. But for our organization specifically, that has not been an area of research.
Now, if somebody does want to start exploring if they or family, loved one has some of these chronic conditions, how can they find out what the steps are to be better managing their health?
So the crux of my work here in the Center for Healthy Aging at the National Council on Aging has been around something that we call evidence-based healthy aging programs. And that's jargon, I realize. So when I say evidence-based, I mean proven. So there are proven and extensively researched programs, the vast majority of which have come out of universities, that are available to teach people the skills they need to better manage their health. And as I mentioned, much of our work here in the Center for Healthy Aging, historically over the past decade or so, and today, has really focused on those programs and making those programs more accessible and more available throughout the country. So when I mentioned that we work with state agencies, community-based organizations, we're working with them to help them to implement and make these programs much more widely available. And there's programs that are specific to falls prevention, behavioral health, physical activity, and of course chronic conditions. And more information is available on our website about those programs.
Now, is there one particular university program that you consider, you know, kind of more effective than most that are out there?
All of the programs that we work with and that we invest our resources in promoting are really strong evidence-based, and they're fantastic programs. There is one program that's specific to chronic disease that in recent years has had a fair amount of federal funding behind it, both from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the U.S. Administration on Aging, and you know, therefore that's really driven a lot of our work as well, because we receive funding to help the agencies offer this program. And that's a program out of Stanford University called the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, or CDSMP as we refer to it in short. And that program is offered throughout the United States as well as worldwide.
So what are they doing in that program that makes it more effective than other things that you've seen out there to this point?
Well, a key premise behind CDSMP, the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, is that regardless of chronic condition, much of the physical and emotional challenges that impact people are similar in nature. So, such as no longer being able to take part in activities that you enjoy, dealing with pains, fatigue, those sorts of things. So, unlike a more traditional health education program where you're segmented by disease, so if you've just received a diagnosis of diabetes, you may be referred to a diabetes education class. If you've been diagnosed with congestive heart failure, you'll be referred to take a class on congestive heart failure. In this program, people with varying chronic conditions attend the workshop together. And I have a colleague who's referred to it as disease agnostic. It's all inclusive. I know, isn't that?
We don't discriminate against anybody's chronic disease.
All diseases are welcome.
Oh, great. I can go. I got a disease.
Exactly. That is the only qualification, or that you're a caregiver of somebody who has a chronic disease. And really another very cool premise of this program is that with training and a detailed curriculum, people with chronic conditions are just as effective facilitators or program leaders as a healthcare professional. And what's really interesting is that participants respond well to their peers as they get a sense that this person understands what I'm going through. This isn't a health educator or a nurse or somebody who's the expert who's standing in front of me saying, you have this disease, if you don't get it under control, this will happen, here's what you have to do. But this is a peer who's like me and who's dealing with the same things that I'm dealing with, and they're providing me with some resources and some hints on how I can better manage my health.
So since it is evidence-based, what kind of evidence for change have you folks discovered from the Stanford program?
Participants who take part in the CDSMP, the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, have seen, like I said, it's been extensively researched through Stanford University as well as through other non-university-related research, improved health status, so just overall people feel better, reduced healthcare utilization, so when they look at emergency room use, inpatient use, et cetera, those components have improved, and self-efficacy. So self-efficacy is kind of a fancy word for the belief that you can do something to make a change and that you feel empowered to make a change. And so we're seeing improved self-efficacy with this program, that people believe that they, in fact, can do something to make a change in their life.
When you say improvement, what would the just approximate stats be on some of this? Just because, you know, like with some cancer drugs, they yell that as a great improvement if the person lived 2 months longer. They spent $100,000, but they lived 2 months longer, so it's becomes questionable in that case whether or not there really is improvement. So what kind of improvements have they seen actually in terms of numbers, percentages, or something like that?
Well, it's interesting because when you look at this from a whole, you may not necessarily see on an individual level real incredible, or, you know, what if I was a person just reading an article and seeing, oh, well, and I'm, this is off of the top of my head, I don't have the research in front of me, but, you know, emergency room usage went down by 0.2%. Well, that doesn't look like a whole lot. But when you multiply that out over a population and the impact that it can have and the effect that it can have, and when you look at the cost savings that can be accrued by that, it is pretty, it's very valuable. And also when we look at healthcare utilization as a, when it comes to more appropriate healthcare utilization. So ER use goes down, but people are now more appropriately accessing healthcare and seeking healthcare because their visits with their primary care providers have gone up. Well, we know that visits to our primary care provider are far less costly than those to the emergency room. So not only are we looking at where are we reducing costs, but also where are costs being shifted so that they're more appropriate.
Anybody tracking on also, like, when you're saying exercise, how many increase their exercise level and those kinds of things, which are the key elements to, you know, as we talked about earlier, of controlling or preventing?
Yes. So we have seen improvements in physical activity. And then aside from the randomized control, which is the you know, kind of the mecca of clinical research, is aside from the randomized control, a number of the sites who are offering this program throughout the country have done their own pre-post-test evaluation to see how this program has impacted participants. And they, too, have tracked things like physical activity, certain behavior changes, communication, those sorts of elements, and consistently are seeing improvements just as with the original research, which really speaks to the program that, you know, this program has been being implemented in communities for well over 10 years now, and people are still seeing those outcome improvements.
So how does somebody find the Stanford Chronic Disease Self-Management Program workshop in their community?
Well, as I mentioned before, CDSMP is offered throughout the United States, although it's likely called something else. You know, I'd like to joke around that CDSMP doesn't really sound sexy on a pin or on a brochure, you know. People, if you're getting a newsletter and it's advertising the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, you might look at it and go, well, huh, what's that? So people have taken to renaming it something that's more attractive sounding, such as Living Well or Healthier Living, and something that really conveys what the program is about, because there are a lot of people who have a chronic condition but who don't necessarily identify themselves as having a chronic condition. So they may have diabetes, but they don't see it as a chronic condition. They just say, oh, I have high sugar. That's just something I have. It's not a chronic condition. So we don't want to market something necessarily with chronic condition as a promotional item. But if you visit our website, the Center for Healthy Aging, at ncoa.org/CHA, we have a really nice interactive map posted, and that map lists all of the relevant points of contact for each state. So whether you're in New Jersey or Missouri or Florida, we can point you to the best person to contact in your state to learn more about the program.
And so that way you don't have to be concerned about what they're particularly calling this program.
Exactly.
In their state.
But just in case you happen to see it referred to as something else, it is the same program.
Great. So for listeners who'd like to pursue all this further, learn more about what the Center for Healthy Aging is doing, you can go to the website again at www.ncoa.org/CHA. ncoa.org/CHA. Christy, thanks for being a guest today at Healthy Alternatives.
Thank you.
My guest next week is going to be Dr. Julie Chen. Julie's been on my show a number of times, and she gives great information. She's a board-certified integrative medicine physician. She's got a clinic in San Jose, California, and she incorporates medical acupuncture, Chinese scalp acupuncture, osteopathic manipulations, a whole range of alternative things into her medical practice. Her background is in internal medicine. She's worked in corporate wellness for various Silicon Valley-based corporations. She's regularly featured on radio and TV programs, and she's recently been a guest a number of times on Dr. Oz. We're going to be talking about a nutrient that you don't normally hear about and the impact that it and another one can have on your life in some fabulous ways. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz. You can find out more about me at teplitz.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.